Hugh said about his granddaughters recorded.
Y'all ready to go?
Thank you.
I would believe that.
We'll open the meeting today.
They know they're wonderful.
Thursday, May 16th, 2013, 10 o'clock, the pension committee meeting. Linda Messick will not be joining us today. We have a few things to discuss. The most important thing and the biggest thing will be our investment analysis for the quarter ended March 31st on the two plans, and then some minor few details on the OPEB and the pension plans as reflected by the budget and in the upcoming year, and then nothing really heavy today. I must leave at 11, so if we don't get finished, Gina or Todd can take over from the end. First thing we need to do is approve the minutes of February 21st, 2013, the last meeting, and we can do that by consent and voice vote. Everybody approve, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone disapprove, nay? Okay, minutes are approved. And Mr. Schoen, if you would like to start with the investment analysis.
Sure. And Susie made sure, she said, I went to three B's, be bold, be brief, and be gone. So I've heard me say that before, but she made sure emphatically this time. So. If you turn to the report, you'll see some loose pages. We'll go over that in a minute, but I think you probably already got this as an economic report, the quarterly update, you know, some that we do, our perspective, and then there's some things that we want to go over on the OPEB fund. Let's start with just the first tab, just a quick economic review. So the well-educated thinking, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, was that because of the sequestration, the markets were going to freeze up, the economy was going to go down, and everybody should pull out of equities. Well, of course, the stock market, U.S. stock market, was up over 10% this quarter and continues to go up. So it's why we strongly believe you don't try to guess. You set a discipline that's appropriate for yourself, and you stick to that discipline unless your specific situations change, not what you perceive might happen in the world. Now, I'm going to make a small, slight deviation from that when I talk about bonds and fixed income, because the long-term expectation, as we've talked about several times, is that the kind of returns you'll get on bonds over the next 5 to 10 years are not going to be anywhere near what you've gotten the last 5, 10, 20, 30 years. In fact, not even what the long-term historic norms are, because bonds actually have done very, very well over the last 30 years. But if you turn to page one on the graph on the top, you'll see the sort of navy blue to blackish color bars. That's think of it as the U.S. economy, the gross domestic product. And if it's above the line, that means it was positive, and obviously below it was a negative, and you can see in 2008, and first quarter 2009, it was a very steep fall off of the economy. Okay, last time we had anything that steep, that fast, was during the Depression of the 1930s. Since then, we've had positives, but not super strong positives. But as I mentioned before, you know, quite frankly, as far as we fell off, as deep as we were, and as far as we looked over the ledge, you know, and down into the cavern, it takes a while to come back, and especially when it's a financial crisis, okay? The last time we had a financial crisis was the 1930s, and we know how long it took to climb back out of that. So for those who think that, well, why aren't we fully back to where we were before, it takes a long time. And quite frankly, you know, people and corporations, they're still scared to spend because they're not sure what the future holds. Having said that, that was the best time when the market, when nobody else wants the stocks, that's when you go back into the market, and you did. You had that discipline, rebounced back to your targets, in essence, buy cheap and sell when things are expensive. Okay, the chart below is just the Federal Reserve balance sheet, and where you see the big climb since 2009 is because of all the Fed action of trying to stimulate the economy with the low interest rates. Now, go on to just a couple other charts, and then we'll get into your specific plan. On page two, you'll see the growth in the federal debt. You know, that has been done intentionally to to stimulate the economy. The gray line is that every time that they reach up to the top, the blue reaches the gray, they have to change the federal debt limits. That's part of the fight you saw last year. I think it was last July, if I remember, because the law spells out that the public debt cannot be greater than the debt limit. So what they do is when they bump up against it, they just raise the debt limit again. One thing that's a bit concerning, so this I should go back and say there's some positive signs. The economy is moving along. It is you know, positive GDP. But if you look at the graph on the bottom under consumer statistics, what you see there, and let's look at the blue. Okay, the blue is what they call real personal consumption. People are spending, okay? And that has stayed fairly level since roughly about 2010, the far right-hand side of there. It dipped significantly during the Great Recession, as you might expect. It bounced back, and now it's stayed fairly level. But you see the green chart, and you see the arrow pointed downward? That is the personal savings rate. What do you take out of that? What it's saying is that to continue the consumption level that they are, people are dipping into their savings. Salaries are not increasing at a fast enough rate to keep up with the spending level, okay? And that is a concern, okay? Because we saw that back in the 90s. We saw it last decade. And if people get too high a debt limit, either you start getting defaults or they have to slow up on their spending again. Okay. Now, what does this mean to the market? On page 3, you can see the blue is for the past quarter, the gray is for the past year. Despite, I'll say, all that information in Cyprus, if you recall that, you know, what was going on last quarter and the concern of the banks in Cyprus, the U.S. stock market was up 10.7%, and for the year would be from April 1st to March 31st, was up 13.9%. Okay. International equities, although positive, were not as strong as the U.S. So you have exposure into international equities, and I'll speak about the pension plan first and then the OPEB. All of your international exposure is through the state pool. You don't have any of your other assets there. In the OPEB, you do have some international managers, Dodge & Cox and Harding Loevner, which I do want to speak about when we get to the OPEB fund. Now, you look at that and say, well, geez, we should have had more in U.S. equities last quarter. Well, the quarter before that, you should have had more in international because international was the better performer. So that's why I go back to the discipline of, you know, one is you'd have to guess right which is going to be better that quarter. You'd have to guess right at the beginning of the quarter. You'd have to meet and make that decision, and then you'd have to implement it. So instead of trying to do that, which is never successful, is you stick with that discipline that you've had, and it's worked fairly well for you. Now, emerging markets, and again, refreshing everybody's memory, emerging markets would be, the big ones would be Brazil, Russia, India, China, what we call BRIC. BRIC isn't just the restaurant over here. BRIC is, you know, BRIC, so Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Then Eastern Europe, Latin America, and most of Asia and Africa. Usually when the economy is going positive and as U.S. markets are up, the emerging markets actually usually do better, okay? Because as the U.S. economy gets stronger, most of those countries are exporting to the U.S. So if we go up a little bit, they can go up a lot. Didn't happen last quarter. Most of the time you said, which way would I bet? I would have bet the emerging markets would have been a better performer. But because of the strength of the U.S. dollar and because the decrease in the commodity prices, emerging markets were actually had a negative quarter. Again, this is why you broadly diversify. As for fixed income, U.S. bonds actually were slightly negative for the quarter. And I think that's, you know, I'm not a betting person, but if I was a betting person, I think that's the trend you're going to see for quite a while, if not negative, below the 5 to 5.25 long-term historic returns. High-yield bonds actually were very good. As the economy does well, high-yield bonds, and that's, I know I joke about this, but that's just another term for junk bonds, below investment-grade bonds. You do not have those in your portfolio. I should back up. You might have a little bit through some of the hedge funds that the state plan has, but in the OPEB fund, you don't have any of that. And you don't have a lot in the state pool either. Those were very strong. But they tend to be very strong when stocks are very strong. Go back to 2008, when the stock market was down 20, high yield was down, stock market was down 40, high yield was down 20. So that's why we don't like to combine high yield with stocks. We like bonds to be there to protect you when the stock market goes down. And emerging market bonds were slightly positive. Some of the other areas, the inflation-sensitive areas, TIPS were negative, commodities were negative, but REITs, which were real estate investment trusts, were positive. But do keep in mind, and REITs long-term actually have done quite well, but the last half of 2007 and 2008, they were the worst performing area. So when the market really tanked, they out. And we all know what happened to real estate in that time period. Okay. And on page 4, a couple quick points here. Value has outperformed growth for the last quarter and actually fairly significantly for the last year. You, by design, have a little bit of a value tilt to your portfolio, as I've mentioned before, but I'll reiterate. We like a little bit more value than growth because value historically has had better returns over a long enough period of time. It's had less volatility, and most of the time, not always, but most of the time, defends better in the down markets. It's more protective. So by design, you don't have all value, but you have a little bit of tilt toward the value area. Try to pick up a little additional there. Okay. Going on to tab 2. Pension had a very, very nice quarter and a nice year. This is on page 8. The return was $3.4 million, and I put in parentheses, net. Net means net of your investment management fees. And for returns, it was 5.8 net, 5.8 gross. You might say, well, how could it be the same? Because it's just rounding. One was net was like 5.76, gross was like 8.45. They happened around, but they're really closer to almost 1 percentage point difference. It was just rounding that forced them both to that number. Maybe we should have taken it out to 2 decimal points, but. And for the year, and that's where you can see the difference there, the net was 9.3 and the gross was 9.6. You've had strong returns with good, and I don't say good, downside protection. I'll show you in a moment where I say that. And all the managers this quarter, except for Fidelity, beat their benchmark. And what's a bit surprising about that is that let's take the state of it. Your other managers are really more designed to protect in the down markets. Yet in the up, in this strong up market, they actually did well anyway. So it was, as I say, very, very nice, very, very nice quarter for you. Okay. Looking ahead, go back to the low interest rates. I think that's the biggest thing out there. It's not that there aren't other things, but there's really, in my opinion, not anything I would do with your pension fund at this point, you know, other than, you know, you've got your cash management piece to make sure that you have enough for your liquidity needs, but no more than that, and you're doing, you know, been doing a nice job with that. I wouldn't touch a thing, you know. And one question I have for you is, you've had some discussion, I think I might have heard, but I forget, on the actuarial assumption issues. Where does that
stand? Well, we didn't change it this year, so there were some budget concerns, but we did run scenarios, so we have, you know, to make the decision to do it or not to do it.
Yeah. So I will tell you, discussions I've had with you on this is the same discussions I've had with all my clients. There's a real concern that the actuarial assumptions, not just you, but for, you know, all the plans out there, are too high on a long-term basis. And noting, as conservative as you are, and definitely, and we as a firm have 30 clients, and I have 13 of them, you're definitely the most conservative portfolio of all of my clients. It's not like you're here and everybody else is over here. You know, most of them are more here. But when you're conservative, which really is, I think, a nice place to be because you're more protected in down markets, you have to recognize that you may be giving up some return on a long-term basis. So I think, you know, 8% assumed rate of return versus how you're at 60% stocks, and noting that even within 60%, you know, I have other clients at 60% stocks, and you're even more conservative than them because, like, how you deal with your bonds and some of your allocation to international. you know, you got to find some way to bridge that gap. Either, and I realize the issue that you run into, and all my clients run into that issue. It's sort of like, yes, Michael, you're right. But if we lower the return assumption, then that means our liability goes up, and that means our annual contribution has to go up. But you need to look at maybe a glide path, you know, over, it might be a multiple-year glide path that either this has to come down, this goes up, which you did a little bit of that, giving the fixed income manager a little bit more latitude. Mm-hmm. But maybe this needs to come up a little bit more. But if you're not, like, if you're only comfortable driving down the road, I would say you're not driving 60 miles an hour, you're driving more like 57 because of the manager selection, then you either have to drive a little faster or leave a little earlier to get there on time.
So work them both together, maybe.
Yes, yeah. But now I could sit here and say that, but you might say, Michael, we're never going to be comfortable to go to like 65% stocks. I'm not making it as a recommendation, but that's one solution. I'd say, well, then if you're not comfortable, then you got to bring this down. Or maybe another possible approach is maybe you move your international up a little bit. You're targeted at 12. Maybe you go to 14 on that, you know. So it's not once, it's maybe a combination of things. So I'm giving you some things to think about. But one of the things, as I say, you have to decide where your comfort zone is. But if your comfort zone is to maybe move it up a little bit, you know, and I'll stress again, it's not from going from here to here, it's going from here maybe to here, then you can bridge that gap between the two of them.
Mike, in our policy constraints, there's allocation constraints, but within fixed income itself, is there room within our policy to make adjustments for like duration or quality that might help us over the course of the next couple of years to, you know, chronically poor performing bonds due to rising rates?
Sure. Very good point. So you took one step of slightly widening what the manager could do that before 75% of the securities that Wilmington Trust managed had to be in agencies, which are treasuries, in government bonds, which are treasuries and agencies. Now it has to be at least 50%.
Yeah, we're at the 50, the last change.
But the other, I just can't remember. Did we change the duration on your? So let me tell you what.
We didn't change the grade or the duration. All we did was change the allocation to 50, I believe.
No, I think, and I apologize for not remembering off the top of my head, but what we've done on several, because I think that's a very, very good question. What we've done with several of our clients, I think we did this a part of yours also, is we said, so right now it says their duration, and think of that as like the average maturity of the portfolio, okay? Closely aligned if you're not familiar with duration. So if duration of their benchmark right now is 5 years, they were allowed to go plus 25% of that, minus 25% of that. It means they could go down to 3.75 years and up to 6.25. What we've done with others, and I think we did it with yours, but I just have to check the policy statement again, is that we said we don't want them to go higher than 6.25 on the upside, 25%. But on the downside, take that down to 50%
of
that.
Yeah, that's exactly what we did.
Okay. So, yes, you've already.
No greater than 25 and no less than 50 of the benchmark.
Yeah. So what does that mean, and why do that? If the concern is that interest rates are going to go up, and you know the first issue is, so first of all, I'd say yes, I do think they are. Now, if you say, well, Michael, when and how much, I'd say, well, that's a very good question. And so while you wait for them to go up, let's say if you said, oh, let's take it all out of bonds and put it into cash. Well, you get zero return then. So you'd be sitting on the sidelines and missing out on opportunity, okay? On the other hand, you don't want them to sit there too long. So by giving the manager some opportunity to say, we're going to put in your hands, Wilmington Trust, that when you think interest rates are going to go up, you can shorten the maturity of your portfolio some. Now you say, well, what's the value of that? When interest rates go up, the longer-term bonds are the ones that are more adversely affected. So what you're doing is put more protection into your plan. You're allowing the manager to become more conservative when they think it's time to be more conservative. So, actually, now, In our firm, we're, you know, we have our investment committee meeting every Monday, and we sit, okay, so what else? What else? You know, there just aren't a whole lot of magic solutions out there. But we're, you know, we're still going through, okay, so are there other things that you and others of our clients are there other solutions, you know? There are some that some are doing, but I'm not sure, like, use of a low volatility equities, which behave sort of like stocks and bonds. But I'm not, I'd be glad to have a separate conversation on that, but I'm not, you know, I'm not sure that this group would be amenable to that, so I don't even bring that one up. So, but there are some, it's a tough issue, and we're trying to find a series of things to deal with that.
Mike, it looks like, according to this, that we're about 25% corporate bonds now with Wilmington Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all, everything investment grade. Everything's triple B or higher.
Yep.
So maybe the bank hasn't really been able to
buy it yet.
Securities to buy it.
Yeah.
Get it up.
Because we've had the agreements are signed. I mean, that the policy's been changed with the bank.
Yeah. Well, so this report is as of the end of March, and the signed documents didn't occur until like a week or two ago.
Yeah.
Right? So they would only have started to implement that.
Oh, they've had them for, I bet they've had them for over a month.
They have, but we just finally got signed documents back. Yeah. I think you got them, and then you forwarded them on to us. So.
Yeah. I mean, I just got them back in the mail.
Yeah.
But they've had them for over a month.
Yeah.
That Wilmington Trust has.
So, and
so at the next quarter, we should see some changes then.
Yeah, well, we did it, let's see, the minute it went to count, we had our meeting in February,
mm-hmm.
Probably went to council in March. Yeah, they probably got them beginning of April.
Yeah.
That's about right, because they've had them a while.
Mike, what is our percentage of equities now in the regular pension fund? I'm sure it's in here, right?
Okay. Well, because of the state plan and because they have other things in private equity and hedge funds, it's a little bit more difficult to pin that down, but it's about 60%.
Can you go to 65 with that? Do you have a 5% leeway, or could that be something
we
could look at?
We do. We have a plus or minus.
You do. I get the question is...
Temporarily?
Well... You could, but I guess the question is, will you know when to move out? Because back in 07, you had moved yourself, you were actually at 70% equities. And, you know, can the board get together and then say, okay, hey, now's the time, you know, when does temporary move back to the other direction? So I would, yes, you could, but I'd probably be more inclined to say, stick with, where, you know, if 60 is your target, stick with that, because then you get into the game of, you know, I hate to use the word market timing because it's only subtle shifts, but you might move up there, but not, you know, well, you know when it's time to move back.
Well, that plus or minus is just kind of to cover you and your policy while the stock market does its thing and you rebalance.
Yes.
It's not to be a permanent policy change unless we could go and make it a policy change, a recommendation. You know, right?
Yeah, and you're exactly right. So what happens is you start day one at 60-40. Well, by day two, that 60, you know, the stock market did better or worse than the bond, so it's going to hopefully be
right.
More than 60 or less than 60. Now, what you have been doing, especially in OPEB, is you started off the year at less than 60 because you had all that cash infusion that came in late December. That actually was a drag on your performance. So it's one of the things that we've got to work on is, are there ways to get things implemented a little bit more quickly so that you don't go into a quarter, you know, either over or under? I mean, you will be a little bit, but it was actually quite a bit under because all of a sudden the cash hit. Now, you needed the cash because you have benefit payments that you set the money aside for, but can you then move some of the bond money over to the stock side to offset that? And what's your process of doing that? Because as it stands right now, it's you guys meet, you make a decision, and it's got to go to county council, and county council has to make, you know, and approve, and then it's got to get implemented. And at that point, it's
How often do you rebalance? How often do you rebalance the fund?
Okay. Here or generally?
The trust.
Every year was what we've been doing on around at time of the contribution, right?
Yes.
And that's when we look at it and you make suggestions and say, okay, you know, let's balance it back or put more in fixed or more in fidelity, or that's what we kind of did last year.
Yeah.
That's what we've been doing,
yeah.
You know, once a year.
That might get it up to 65.
Yeah.
The stock market's going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, without by just doing it once a year.
Right.
Right.
Stocks are going up faster.
Right. So it might naturally go to that 65, which is our plus part, which is our margin on its own.
Now, what you have, because that's the top end of it, you know, even though historically you've been doing it once a year when the cash goes in, one of the values of the quarterly reports is if we see, you know, if there's a huge run-up in the market or a huge fall-off in the market, you don't have to wait a year. You know, if you get up close to or over that 65
right.
or down to that 55, that's the point in time. You don't, in my opinion, you don't wait to the end of the year to do that. You know, you say, okay, let's bring it back to 60. But there's a cost to do it because you've got to sell stocks and buy bonds or sell bonds and buy stocks depending on which direction it goes. So that's why it's not like 61 or 62%. You want to make it wide enough that, you know, you say, well, it behooves us to rebalance the portfolio. Okay. Just a couple other small things and... Okay, and then we'll move on to the OPEB. You'll see on page 10, you see the starting balance, withdrawals. Withdrawals, just, you know, they include management fees. In this case, it was the management fees, net investment change, and then the ending market value. You see the breakdown of the cost. I will tell you, the cost of your fund is higher than the rest of my clients. But it's because of the state fund. The state fund is expensive, but it would be expensive because of the private equities and the hedge funds. And the question becomes is, does that create enough additional return to overcome the cost? And in most time periods, the answer has been yes. No. Not always, but most of the time it's been yes. But you know, our average client ranges between, you see your 0.61%, between our lowest is 0.23%, but most of them are 0.35 up to about 0.43. Okay. If you go to page 11, go in the upper right-hand corner, and this, I'll say, reconfirms what I've talked about being not only conservative, but the implementation of being even more defensive. You see the blue square? This graph is a measure of how your fund has done on up markets versus down markets. How do you read this? If you go straight across from the blue square, you'll see 90 in the up markets. Go straight down, just a little bit over 70, so for ease, I'll just say 70, okay? How do you read that? That means in the up markets, your fund does about 90% of its benchmark. So if the benchmark's up 10, on average, you're up 9. The down markets, though, if your benchmark's down 10, you're only down 7. That's a very nice trade-off, okay? Excellent trade-off, okay? You know, because I can tell you, plans either fall on the lower left-hand side or the upper right-hand side. They don't, on a longer-term basis, end up in the upper left or the lower right, because you're either going to do a little better in the up markets or a little better in the down markets. But I'll go back to, although this reconfirms how well it's done when you start with 60% equities and then you've done, you know, defended well in the down markets and given some up in the up markets, it makes it very difficult to get to that 8%.
Michael?
Yes?
How much are we sacrificing each year with our current conservative tilt? I mean, how much are we sacrificing, would you say, on average? I mean, we did 9.6 gross, 9.3% net for the year. Would we have exceeded 10% normally if we had been a little more less conservative?
Well, Last year, yes. Okay. Other years, you know, in the down markets, you know, so it's
you never
yeah,
know, but
yeah, it's it depends what you know.
I just meant like 1 year, just last year.
Last year, actually, interesting enough.
Because yeah, I know you couldn't.
If you'll bear with me a second here, I
well, that goes to say when you say stay the course, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Covered and up and down, and not be so greedy. Where you're willing to risk when we have a well-funded plan and we're doing well.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm not recommending anything.
Yeah.
I'm
just saying, I know.
Just this last year, you know, you mentioned that.
And I'll
just to get an idea.
The assets at risk when.
I don't know if they would go over 10% or not.
Yeah. I mean, if
probably.
Equities have been in
so,
April's.
Actually,
April
I'll give
May,
it. I asked somebody to email this to me this morning. And
you must be earning more than
expectation that you might. So,
yeah.
15
so, give you an example. As you know, with some of our clients, we, you know, they actually have us do the hiring and firing managers. So, I looked at our model portfolios. Last year, what we call the 60C portfolio, okay, did 10.1%. Okay. The 60M, which is still 60%, but not quite as conservative with the manager selection. Did 10.1 also, but our 65 C's and M's did 10.6.
Is that net or gross?
That is gross.
Gross.
And so and your 9.6 here is gross also.
Half a point or more.
Yeah.
But I know you can only really do 1 year, but I'm just curious, you know, we are somewhat conservative, you know, how that does stand up with your other yeah. clients.
And to give you another, so for 3 years you did 9.1, and ours did, on the 65s, did 9.7 and 9.8. The 60% ones did 9.2 and 9.3. So I'll say our model portfolio is maybe just a little bit better than yours at 60% equities. The 65s, because stocks did better than bonds, you know. But having said that, if you look on page 13, you'll see your 5.8% still ranked in the top 24% nationally. And your 9.6 ranked in the 53rd, roughly average nationally. And this is, just so you know, this is plans of all sizes, okay? Includes the billion-dollar plans, which, interestingly enough, don't necessarily do any better than the smaller plans. They tend to do a little better in the up markets, not as well in the down markets. And for 3 years, you're still above average. So when you take into consideration the very conservative nature of how you've done things, you've done very, very well, okay? Because generally, the more aggressive ones are the ones that have done better the last couple of years.
Do we have a lower beta overall?
Oh, yes.
Conservatives normally would.
Yes.
So we shouldn't have dramatic losses unless things go to heck, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, 2008, everybody had dramatic losses. Yours might be a little bit less.
That's a once-in-a-lifetime thing maybe or something.
Having said that, you know, the state plan is going to be more aggressive than the rest of the pieces of your portfolio. You've, by design, basically said, here's what you want the overall picture to do. The state plan, you know, because they're going to be in the private equity, they're about 20% in international stocks. They're going to, you know, and they can take a little more volatility and uncertainty than yourselves, okay? So that's why you have that, and then you've complemented it with, you know, DuPont, which is a conservative, you know, equity approach, Wilmington Trust, which is a very conservative fixed income approach, Fidelity, which, you know, they're a conservative, you know, small cap approach. So I'll say, put the team together the way you wanted it. To say, I look at the overall, I'll say, risk reward return here. It's really good, really good.
So we can sort of stay put, basically.
I'd sort of stay put, unless you said, we want to move this up a little bit.
A little better.
Yeah, but
as you mentioned, you know, make some tweaks there and, you know, maybe improve things a little bit.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So on to OPEB. Okay. So what I'd say about this is improving, things still to do. Okay. So for the quarter, $1.35 million net, return of 5.1. Gross of 5.2, 1 year 1.8, net 7.1, gross 7.6. part, not all, but part of, I'll say, on the drag on this performance relative to the pension fund is because the cash that went in at the very end of the year. And so that had, and it was, it's now down to about 7.7% of the portfolio, but it was up to about as much as 10. Okay, so you were under allocated to equities going in, into the quarter. You were still a little under, even for this quarter, as well as equities did. So I think it's something that for next year, got to think a little bit more about. Okay, so what can you do to get that up to that your targets when that cash goes in? Okay, definite improvement, yeah. But as I mentioned, more to do. And I know we've talked about this before, but you know you had a certain type of way you had to do things. You got the best portfolio you could at the time. What we did last year was say, let's address what we consider the most important things to do. Now there's some other stuff. I didn't want to hit you with 5 or 6 changes all at one time. So I hit you with 2 changes then. I'd like to hit you with a couple others I'd like to suggest.
Those returns are definitely better than what we were getting on before it was changed.
Oh, yeah.
But the market's been a little bit better, too, so.
Yeah. So one thing, and then we'll show you the returns, and then we'll go into, you know, I guess everybody got the proposed changes. Did we only set those out a couple days ago? I don't know if they did or not, but anyway. So Harding Loevner is your global equity manager, okay? And Harding Loevner's long-term return has been very good. They are a high-quality growth manager. So they will tend to do, you know, a little better in the down markets than they do in the up markets. Not hugely different, but a little better in the down markets than the up markets. Their international only, I mean, buying just U.S. stocks, has continued to do very well. The global one, which is buying U.S. and non-U.S. stocks, has not done as well. So we wouldn't propose getting rid of them, but we'd like to suggest that you change the mandate that you have for them. Why not use them with what has done better for them? And we tend to think that they're a little bit stronger on the international side. Now, if you do that, that means some other things. So if you take some U.S. stocks away from them, then those U.S. stocks have to go somewhere else. Look at that. And then the other looking ahead is the low interest rates. You know, same thing we've talked about already. Okay. So go to page 36, if you will. You can see the cash flows, beginning market values, withdrawals. Okay, for this quarter, the withdrawals were the management fees for the year. That included, you know, cash outflows for benefit payments. Net investment change, 5.2 versus 7.6. And then you can see, you know, are you within the range? And I'll go back to where I mentioned fixed income. Your policy is 40%. You're currently at all, currently meaning as of the end of March, at almost 42%. Now, if you're at 42%, and I don't have the exact number, that meant going in the beginning of the quarter, you were probably about 45%. And that's why I meant that was a drag on performance because you were underallocated to stocks. Doesn't mean you didn't participate. You actually had more than 5% return, but could have had more. Okay. You can see on the charts below, you know, you can see that pretty consistently you've been under the benchmark, and that's primarily some of it because of cash, some of it because of the managers that you had, and some of it is, as I said, being under-allocated to equities in the rising equity markets. Now, if you go on to page 38, you'll see, even with 5.2% return, for some reason they took it out an extra decimal point on this one, I'm not sure why, but you still ranked above average nationally. Okay? You might say, well, how can that be? We were conservative at the time, we paid to be aggressive, we were underallocated on our fixed income. A couple reasons. One is that most of your managers actually did well, okay? Not all of them, but most of them. But last quarter, international stocks significantly underperformed U.S. stocks, as I mentioned earlier. And emerging markets did even worse compared to the U.S. market. Compared to the average plan out there, even though you're more conservative, In that area, it paid to be more conservative because you have lower allocations to international stocks and emerging markets. The average public fund out there is closer to 18 or 20% international, much higher allocations to emerging markets. So that piece of being conservative actually worked for you, even though having a lower allocation to equities did not. And that still, as I said, still put you above average. Okay, that's why I say vastly improving, okay, versus where you were last year and the year before, but still more to do. Okay, if you look at the, go on to page 40, and I would suggest at the same time, pull out, there's a one-page report here. Okay, where we bring it also up, you know, through the end of April, how each of the funds have done. So let's start with BlackRock Equity Dividend. Of course, we start out with the worst performer on a relative basis to start with, but they were in the bottom 2% for the quarter, but up 8.4%. But in the next month, they picked up 40 basis points. They're at 1.9 versus 1.5. Now, your first look might say, wow, we just added them, you know, a little over a year, a half a year ago. Their performance hasn't been good since then. What's up? They do very well in the down markets. And you're going to hear this thematically through all these. So in 08, 2011, they did very well. And you actually see their 5 years, their ranking's still above average, even with last year's return. Okay.
I don't think they have much in technology, if any, on that
right. front. Right. And they're not designed to, because they're a high dividend-oriented company. Right. So even though they don't look good right this moment in time, I still like the long-term theme. You know, that, again, you combine different players. But I always have to say that it's always nice the first couple quarters when you have a new fund for it to do well. So, the Vanguard Dividend Growth Fund, which is actually managed by Wellington, has done very well for you. It was up 11 for the quarter. And you can see if you go to the one page for the 1 month, it was up another 3.1. So they're up 14.4 year to date. They are more of what you call a core manager. And all that says dividend, they're not looking for high dividend, they're looking for growing dividend. Okay. The next one is the index fund. You have, you know, a lot more in that area than the other two. It's designed to do no more or no less than the index. And you can see for the quarter they were up 10.9. And then you go to the one page, you're up 12.9 for year to date. Okay. Mid cap index, that was just added. And so that's the good story of the new ads. You just added that one because we had suggested you didn't have enough, you didn't really have much in mid-cap stocks. You added that, and that was your best performer for the quarter, up 12.9, and then has continued on. It's up 14.8 for year to date. Bridgeworth, another defensive manager, but up 11.8 for the quarter, and then although down 2.1 for the month, still up 9.4 for the year to date. Dodge & Cox is your one home run hitter in their lineup. They will tend to do very well in the up markets, not as well in the down markets. And I contrast them with BlackRock and Ridgeworth, who are, you know, the real defensive managers. Then Harding Loevner, who I mentioned earlier, you've got a pretty high allocation to them. You had to have it at the time because your target was 12% international. Since you picked global managers a couple years ago, a global manager is only going to be 50% U.S., 50% international. Roughly, pretty close approximation. So you had to get up to 12% of each of those two together to get your 12% overall. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, you look at their five-year numbers; they're still in the top half. But as we peel them apart, you know, our question was to us was: were we going to say to you, do nothing, get rid of them, or do something different with them? And you know, and what we would say is do something different with them, which would mean take some money from them and use them just as an international manager. Okay. And then if you go, and let me, actually, I should back up, because I failed to mention it in the pension report. Wilmington Trust continues to do a very nice job for you on your bonds. Very nice in a tough market for a bond manager to add value. They've been adding value on a very conservative basis. So that's, you know, we've been very pleased. And they try to limit the amount of turnover in the portfolio. I mean, they need to sometimes because that's why you hire them, but they're cautious and judicious in doing that as much as possible, buy and hold. If you go on to page 41, then you can see the expense ratio there. That one is significantly less than the pension at 38 basis points. All the returns we show you are gross returns, so you really need to net out the at the universe level, the previous page, okay?
Thank you.
Okay. So, any... Do I have time to do this?
Well, let me cover some of these things.
Sure.
I do need to be on the road by 11, but I'd like to cover some of these things for the committee. This is doesn't have to really do with our investment portfolio, but we need to cover them. And just talking about, because some of the outside members, you know, that we do have a budget impact on the pension in different ways. For instance, on the OPEB plan, starting July 1st, it won't affect the OPEB, it will affect the OPEB plan, but it affects the budget. We will be doing the spousal coordination of benefits and the birthday rule and have a new dental and vision reimbursement plan, which we anticipate to reduce our health care costs in our budget, so which would possibly reduce our contribution in our OPEB plan. So that's how the budget will tie in with that in the future, because the spousal coordination will take lives off our plan and to drastically reduce our expense, especially with the new health care plan coming out and the potential tax based on the lives on plans and that kind of stuff. So that doesn't really affect the OPEB plan documents or anything. But on the pension plan, we've looked at it all throughout the year, different things, and we had a workshop with council, and they have continued in the last 2 years to see what we could do to reduce our plan, the impact of having all these employees, the richness of a defined benefit. So we have decided that new employees will start contributing to the plan January 1st at 3% after the first 6,000. This is what most all other counties and related municipalities do, the state, Kent, Newcastle. So that is a big change for us, so they will have that contribution to the plan, and that will reduce as those employees filter out and new employees filter in the long range, you know, the actuary has determined it's a savings. We're also looking at, although we have not done it yet in a definitive form, is the vesting gone from 8 to 10 years, and maybe change the retirement date from 62 and 8 years to 65 and 10, and perhaps lifting the caps on the years of service. We had an ordinance that capped the years of service for people hired after a certain date at 25 for medics and dispatchers and 30 for those employed, for regular employees. So those things we've been looking at and discussing, which affect the pension plan because it will affect the actual policy, the trust, and how they calculate benefits, which all goes to the ARC. So the biggest thing, I guess, is the contribution. That's kind of new. And really the council, just every time we talked about a benefit, whether it was a health insurance benefit or we brought up a change to this, they just went right into that. Well, when are you gonna change the pension plan? They really had no... they didn't have a grasp of what a defined benefit versus a defined contribution, and that they kind of, I think, wanted us to go into a defined contribution, which we could have, but, you know, we wanted the defined benefit plan. We felt it was a good plan for the employees. It was a draw for a benefit. So we didn't really want to tweak on freezing it like Newcastle has done with different things. They'll freeze a plan and open a new one. So we kind of got them onto the contribution, and that kind of, they were pleased with that. So that's what's going on with the budget and the discussions and the plan as far as the committee's concerned.
Has there been a ballpark estimate as to what impact the budget these changes will have?
Well, yes, in terms of percentages, but the one with the 3% would be so subtle, you know what I mean? You would have to pretty much change your personnel to get an impact on that. However, on the lifting the caps to the years of service, it could be actually cheaper on the plan because they would stay an employee longer and draw on the pension not as much. So, you know, I don't know if any of those are gone anywhere. They're just what is an option to change, to tweak the plan.
Well, I'm just wondering whether it makes any sense to consider packaging up those sorts of changes with a change to the assumed rate of return so as to, you know, on balance, not have as large an impact on the budget as looking at them separately.
That's a good idea, like bringing it in as a package of changes rather than focus on each individual thing, but do all that they want to do at one time. Yeah. Something we can work on.
And of course, some of the salaries, that starting salaries for some people aren't that tremendous. I mean, they would have the 3% hit, you know, if they're hired after January. I would just, you know, if you're making, you know, on the lower ranges, that would kind of be a somewhat of a burden for you. I mean, I'm not being negative about what you're proposing.
I agree.
But just, it's good that you are going to maintain a defined benefit because that's security.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I'm not trying to be negative. That's the only thing I can think of, that someone at a lower wage rate, of course, you hopefully can progress, you know, I mean.
And we had some internal discussions about that, and I think we all wanted to keep the defined benefit in place because of that reason. And certainly you can't look at the pension discussion without talking about the salaries, too. You've got to keep the whole package in front of you. So I agree, Jeff, that we need to be able to take both of those into consideration. You know, council, they kind of read the headlines and they see that there's other municipalities that are going bankrupt or there is no money in their pensions, and they worry about that. But when you get down in the weeds and you start really looking into the condition of our pension, or if there's any silver bullet out there to help us be even more secure, if we could even be more secure, and there really wasn't any.
Mm-mm.
So this is just a little chip at trying to make it a little more better, I guess you could say. So and have the least amount of impact.
And like you said, we change health insurance, we change pension, we keep our salaries low. We're really messing with our attractability to new when it does, the tide does turn, and it will, and we need to hire. We're not at the same level that we used to be, where, you know, you've got the rich health insurance and the nice pension, and I'll take this lower salary because it's, I mean, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
We are quite a bit different from Kent County salary, and they're not that far. So when we start chipping away, and I know we've talked about this with personnel, and, you know, the spousal coordination is a little bit different, the birthday rule, and then you new employees have to contribute. And if we don't increase those salaries to be competitive, then we're not competitive in our benefits, which we were always strong with.
I think salary was a factor, and, you know, we recently hired a very senior person in engineering. We had people dropping out that were very, I knew a couple of them, very well qualified. And we hired an excellent person. I'm stating we had people that, you know, were really outstanding, but I think the salary just wasn't what they were expecting, and they dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, of course, that's going to happen, you know, but we had like three or four, I think I heard. So, I mean, it's something to consider, but, you know, that being competitive salary-wise.
Thank you. Let me slip that in because I do have, and I do apologize to the committee.
I guess we have to take this opportunity under additional business to recognize Susie. This will be Susie's last official pension committee meeting.
I might come back and visit if I get an invite.
Yes, please come back in our next meeting but
in the audience.
There's not much room, but
I leave you in very, very capable hands, Gina's.
You can heckle me from the background.
I might. You do look like you could use some company.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Susie. I have to go. I just had a personal emergency.
Thank you, Susie, for your contributions and.
No.
It's inevitable.
I thank you, David, for teaching me along the way.
No, you've done a great job. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So are you getting your pension?
No. And maybe you could talk about that when I leave to make pensioners 20 years. That would help me out a bit.
The Susie Webb loophole? Yeah, we can work that out.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susie.
Thanks, Susie. Michael, do you want to go back and cover that one last item?
Okay, yeah. So as I mentioned, I think there has been definite improvement in the structure of the OPEB fund. But, I've got to tell you, it still has work to do. And when I compare it to our model portfolios where we do discretionary consulting and some of our other clients, I'd like it not to sit and wait, too long to make some changes. So, if you go to this one that says Sussex County OPEB rebalancing options, okay, and the first page just lays out just a couple of the options. Hire an international manager, terminate BlackRock, and convert Harding Loevner. This is not in any particular order. So it's not like, here's their first preference, here's their second, here's their third. It's just to lay out different possibilities. Two is to hire a large cap growth manager, convert Harding Loevner, and also convert Dodge & Cox to international. And the third one is to hire a large cap growth manager, hire an international manager, and convert Harding Loevner to international. So if you go to page 2, we show where you are currently, what a rebalanced portfolio would look like with no manager changes, but just getting you to the targets. Okay. Then options 1, 2, and 3 are the ones that I enumerated before. As you can see in the first option, what we're trying to do is, and you can see in all of them, you see us suggesting moving Harding Loevner to international versus global. Okay. But if you do that, then what are the other changes you need to make? Okay. So, and we lowered the target to Harding Loevner also all the way down to 4%. We also lowered Dodge & Cox down to 8. Now, why does that mean a new international manager? Okay, well, if Dodge & Cox is global, half of it's international, half of 8 is 4% plus the 4 with Harding Loevner, that gets you to 8, you need another 4. Conversely, although we could have had another option here, is we could just say, let's leave Harding Loevner at 6%, leave Dodge & Cox at 12%, and that gets you to 12 also, and not add an international manager. I guess there really should have been a fourth option there. Option 2 does not terminate BlackRock. Okay, as I mentioned, they did not have a good quarter, at least relative to their peer group. But we still like them because of their long-term performance, and they tend to do better. They just do better in down markets, and that was a strong up market. But that one would actually increase the amount of BlackRock, which is a tough thing to digest at a time when they didn't have a good quarter. But it's not just picking good managers. It's engineering all the pieces together so that you have the right amount of value and growth, the right amount of large cap, mid cap, and small cap, the right amount of international and domestic stocks, and the right amount of fixed income. That one also increases the amount to the Russell 1000 index. It increases what goes to the Vanguard Dividend Growth Fund. It changes Harding Loevner to international. And then Dodge & Cox also we switch over to international. That way you don't have to add another international manager. Okay, that's another way to do it. And then a third option is just another little play off of that, but a little bit less to BlackRock, a little bit less to Vanguard Dividend Growth, and you add another growth manager to the lineup. I know that's a lot of moving pieces, but as I say, we're trying to get you to get to the performance level of some of our other funds, and you've moved in that direction, but we want to shove you a little bit more in that direction. While sitting here, I also thought about, you know, one of the difficulties with any of these options, as I've laid them out, is then you would need us to come back and say, okay, here's three choices. Okay, you know, three choices on the growth manager, three choices on the international manager. You'd have to digest that, make a decision. That's a quarter from now. Then it'd have to go to county council, and the county council would have to approve that. And we're, you know, into September or October. So I thought about, is there anything that could be done that would expedite that process? Okay. So one other, not to confuse more what can already be a bit confusing, but while I was sitting here and I put down these numbers, is that if you'll write option four on the far right-hand side, is BlackRock, you leave at 4%. Okay. Vanguard dividend growth, 6%. This will be close to option three. The index fund, you move from 19% to 24%. Okay. You do not, okay, and the next one. So the next one stays at 5, stays at 5, stays at 8. Nothing with Harding Loewen or Global. Wilmington Trust is still at 35. Cash is still at 5. You do not add a large cap growth manager at this point in time. You may come back and still suggest that, but to say, that might be done. Dodge and Cox, you don't switch them to international. And Harding Loewen, you leave it at 4%. You make that 6%. Make that 8%. Make Harding Loewen 8%. Okay. And that's down from the 12% they have now.
Nothing for international manager.
Well, I'd say in my perfect world, yes, I'd have you hire another international manager. But I'm sitting here thinking, you know, what's the length of time it takes for that to happen versus are there some things you could do now? And then you could charge us. So that way you're not having to pick any new managers, okay? You're just reallocating among those, okay? And then I can come back and say, okay, if you want to look at some new international managers, I'll bring them to the next meeting, and then you can look at them at that point. You know, now you could sit and wait as it is now, but I will tell you, I was never totally comfortable with Dodge and Cox and Harding Loewen having that much allocation anyway. Okay, so I wouldn't mind Dodge and Cox being a little bit lower, and I, you know, as I say myself, I'd prefer to have Harding Loewen international versus global, and then this is, as I say, just reallocation versus changing. You're not hiring any new managers. You're not terminating any managers.
Why the increase in the Russell 1000?
Because you're taking, if you take money from Harding Loewen's global, you'll have domestic equity that has to go somewhere.
Right.
Okay. And since I want to stay style neutral with that, you could actually give a little bit more to Vanguard Dividend Growth if you want to, but I wouldn't give it to BlackRock because that'd give you more value. And you want something more, you know, Harding Loewen is actually growth, high quality growth. So you, if you're taking it from that piece, you don't want it to go over, you know, but it instead of the Russell 1000, if you want to give it a little more to dividend, Vanguard Dividend Growth, you could do that also. I'd be fine with that.
So with the option number four, you could implement that rather quickly without having to research another international manager fund or large cap growth manager and get it done pretty quickly with approval from the county council.
Yeah, well, Would you need county, I mean, I'm not, county council have to approve changing the targets to each manager? You just have, you have the managers there and just say, look, we're, instead of having this percent here, we, I mean, discount, I'm not trying to circumvent what your rules are, but is that something that needs to go to county council, or is it the hiring and firing of managers that, that needs to go there?
In the past, they've always brought it to the county council. I don't know if they've ever really objected to anything, but.
Yeah, I probably just a course of business to get that stamp of approval. But
sure.
And if we did it here, we could do it fairly quickly and move on it. Normally, whatever the committee recommends, the council will go along with, especially something that's not too controversial or a huge swing in direction.
Right, yeah.
What do you think about this, Dave, this option for?
I like it. Mm-hmm. That's an easy way to get something done quickly and makes sense to me.
Seems like we're leaving money on the table right now, so it's kind of good to do something quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gina?
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Any comments, you?
Well, I think it'll make for more, it'll lower our management fees, putting more in the cheapest, least expensive manager. It doesn't break very much new ground, so, I think this is a pretty conservative move forward. I'd be supportive.
Should we entertain a motion to support option four as laid out by Michael? Okay. I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Motion to adopt recommendation number four as outlined by Michael, and I'm sure we'll get that in writing or otherwise after the meeting. Okay.
Yeah, we'll get it.
That's no problem.
Now, is that motion to recommend it to council?
We'll take it to council. Well, we just approved it, so we'll take that to, thank you, Nancy. Yes, we will take that motion to council as well. Take that action to council for approval. And we can do that in a future meeting very quickly.
Okay. When do they meet?
We meet next Tuesday. We take a week off, and then we're back. So it'll be 3 weeks from, it'll be 2 weeks from this coming Tuesday.
Okay.
For stamp of
approval. So we'll get you probably today, if not today, tomorrow. You know, we'll put option four down for you. So here's where you are now. Here's what, option four. Should I put option four down, or should I just say, rebound. I won't say it's option four because then somebody will, well, what's option one, two, and three?
Yeah, just put the recommendation.
The recommendation, yes. Okay. And why? We'll put that, and here's why.
That would be great.
We built up a pretty good amount of money here now. It's kind of important to make some changes more than we have in the past. I mean, fine tune it a little better.
Sure.
Now that we have the funds, it might work out, hopefully.
The nice thing with, this being all institutional mutual funds, too, is, there's not transaction costs to selling and buying stocks and bonds to do that. So, you're not hit with that charge, which on separate accounts you would. So.
Yes.
That's June 4th. Would be our meeting. That'd be the earliest we could do that. It's plenty of time.
Plenty of time. So, as I say, well, I'll call that in for, as I leave here, so it's you'll probably see it this afternoon from Lisa. So,
anything else, Michael? Okay.
All I got.
Any comments or considerations by the committee?
I just think we're getting very good information from Michael and his firm. I mean, this is voluminous, and but not a bunch of boilerplate that you don't need. This is really good. Really glad that we're using your services. I think it's working out well.
Great, thank you.
It's my opinion. I'm only one person, so good to read. You'll read these things.
Yeah, my only comment it would be to not lose sight of this assumed rate of return. I think if there's something that could come to bite us down the road, in terms of a hindsight view, it would be not having looked really carefully at that long-term, assumed long-term rate of return and made some adjustments, painful as they may be, because, well, I just think we're, we run the risk of being more out of step.
Mm-hmm. I think you brought up a very good point that maybe combining the recommendations that are coming with the rate of return change, it might help balance it out budget-wise and make it, you know, make it more amenable for the county council, maybe.
Makes sense to package it. So you're thinking about all aspects, I think.
Right. You're more realistically looking at what you can expect on return, plus you're looking at the benefits that are offered and how that's structured.
Plus it gives a reason, too, to suggest changes to benefits. I mean, you're not doing it just to be mean to people. You're doing it because, you know, prudence in your pension administration says that you ought to be looking at this.
Right.
And that assumed rate of return is probably the biggest single impact to that.
What we're seeing others do is, you know, because we've run into the same issue that others have is, yes, we agree, how can we afford that change? And so two things they're looking to do, well, beyond even some of these benefit design structure changes, is one is to take it down incrementally. Like maybe, you know, on your asset allocation mix, you may even need to be as low as 7. You know, that's actuary's the one that should opine on that, not myself, but I'll give my opinion anyway. But it may be in steps, you know, 0.25% a year or something like that. That's digestible. The other is it's if you have a good year in the investment side, it's easier to digest it because then you've gotten some actuarial gains. So you say instead of you know taking those, say okay, we won't lower our ARC because we had actuarial gains. What we'll do is we'll lower our assumed rate of return and match that up to that. So I mean we'll see how the year goes, but you know this year at least so far might give you some flexibility in doing that. You know.
In the future, I mean, if transfer taxes start kicking back up again, I mean, is there potential, I think we discussed it before, of going back where we'll let the amounts ride rather than, you know, we can put extra money into the pension fund, you know, rather than what we've done the last few years, you know. I mean, that would be, you know, we would hopefully have the funds then, I mean, when things are going well with the real estate. We usually were, you know, doing pretty well in that area, obviously. They go hand in hand. And that would help the pension also grow quicker in the OPEB.
Great.
Yeah. We weren't drawing, years ago, we weren't drawing money out of OPEB or even the pension fund. You know, so basically when that was an additional, that worked as an additional contribution to the fund, you know, so it really upped it. Mm-hmm. You know, well, we could afford to do that.
One additional business I thought of, sort of unrelated, but Hugh Leahy recently announced that he is going to twilight into retirement and enjoy more time with his grandchildren, I believe.
Yes.
We reviewed the bylaws of the committee. That does not change his availability to serve on the committee, so we would welcome you even in retirement to continue your service, please.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Great.
Any other business that we need to entertain today before we recess? Make a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.